I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. On this episode of the Productivityist Podcast, I speak with Damian Lupo. Now, Damian is a born entrepreneur. He's started his first business at the age of 11. He started 30 More Cents. He's the founder of his own martial art, Yokido, which is trademarked. He's also the holder of three other black belts. Damian paid for his first rental house with a Visa. Amazing stuff there. He bought 150 houses in seven states over the next 5 years and then went through a $20 million meltdown in 2008. So he's gone through a lot. And we're going to talk about the idea of abundant productivity. That's what we're going to dive into here is kind of like the idea of where abundance can play a role in your productivity, kind of the like why the why matters and all that kind of stuff. So let's just get into that conversation right now. Here's my conversation with Damian Lupo here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. I'd like to welcome Damian Lupo to the Productivityist Podcast. Damian, thanks for joining me today.
Mike, it is a pleasure. Thanks for having me, my friend.
So I am a big believer in the power of words and triggers. And when I received a copy of your book after, you know, you sent it to me, which again, thank you for doing that, invented, you know, life reinvented, or it's basically reinvented life. Like it's the way it's the optically set up on the page is really cool because it could be re-life, it could be reinvented, but it's reinvented life. And you co-authored this with Christopher Ashby. I create three words every single year that I use as kind of like my guiding principles. And in 2017, I chose redesign, rebuild, reclaim. I kind of told you the story about that before we jumped on the air here. So I'm really, really happy to have you on the show to talk about some other kind of reinvention and the reinvention of life. So thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, man, it's really going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this.
So first off, why... The other books you sent me are a bit of a departure from this. They're not exactly the same as this one in a lot of ways. Why did you and Christopher decide that you needed to get this book out of you and into the world?
Well, part of this was that going through my process in the 2000s when I built up a business and ended up losing $20 million, I had all of this pain and these toxic scars and things inside, and I needed to get it out. I think if we go through trauma, it goes back to this thing I saw one time watching a possum. Once a possum falls out of a tree, if you watch real close, the possum will actually run really, really fast. It'll shake. It looks like it's shaking, but it's running really fast to go through the process, the fight or flight, and it's going through this thing to get all of that anxiety out of its system. And I didn't have something in me to create that shake. I needed some process to get all of that fear and everything that I'd gone through, all the anxiety out. And so this book was me getting it out so that I could move on with my life.
So the subtitle is How Two Friends Moved From Conflict and Pain to Consciousness and Purpose. How did you and Christopher get together? Were you guys just having a beer or a coffee and said, you know what? I'm having these kind of feelings. Let's co-author a book about this. Like, how did the two of you get together to kind of manifest this thing? Because I mean, your story is interesting, and his story is as well. How did that coalesce, and how did that alignment come to be?
It was part of it was weird because we were talking. I was in Miami visiting with him, and I was sharing that I was going to write this book, and this is early 2012. And he said, I'd like to write it with you. And I looked at him and I thought, how in the world are we going to write a book about a story, my story? And you're going to write it with me. And I said, literally within seconds, I said, I'd love to. Let's do it. No idea how I was going to do it. And what I found is that we ended up going deep into a relationship, really connecting as friends by sharing all of these lessons that entangled. They were really similar, even though our stories are very different. We went through a lot of the similar process of reinventing ourselves. And it couldn't be more different on the outside. It was, you know, he was a classical musician and moved into finance. And I was in the middle of finance and moved into more of a spiritual money type of mentor for people. And it was very different. And it was an opportunity I think the universe showed up with. And it said, here you go. Do you want to do something that's radically different from everybody else's book and everybody else's story? Do you want to combine those? And it created an opportunity for us to connect and share our stories together.
Well, it's laid out in a really interesting way because you've got your different stories, each, you know, your story, his story, And then, you know, the kind of the theories behind things, it's really laid out in an interesting way. And I guess you could say that you guys getting together was like kind of a trigger event of sorts. Now, I'm a big believer in triggers. I think I use them all the time, whether it's, you know, and I mean, whether you use them in a technological sense. So, for example, I have a trigger that I've set up recently that is set to remind me about a half hour. Sometimes and actually it depends on the day. Generally about a half hour before I go to bed, it's a trigger to write in my journal. Like, you know, so it's an alarm, it's a trigger event, and that's a minor one, but there's the trigger events come in all shapes and sizes, don't they?
They do. I tend to put things in front of me, so I literally have to trip over them. Mm-hmm. And so I'll snooze those triggers too often. And I know that if my journal is right in front of me, it's the first thing I see. I sit down with my cup of coffee in the morning. It's those things. That's how I know. It's why I book things. If something matters to me, I'll book it. I book the plane ticket. I book a non-refundable. Whatever it is that matters, I make sure it's in front of me, so I have to go through it. That's a big part of my trigger event.
Right. And I mean, one of the things that I talk about with my audience is the idea of using theming, like time theming, and when you're crafting your time and daily themes, and having the trigger of when you wake up in the morning, and instead of saying, what do I need to do today? Or what do I want to do today? Such an open-ended question. Instead of having that trigger there, which says, well, what day is it? Oh, it's Monday. Monday is coaching day, or Tuesday is admin day. It gives you some, as you put, purpose. What trigger events do you remember most fondly that have kind of led you down this path of reinvention?
Gosh, the trigger events, there are a couple of trigger events that led me to push into the space of reinventing, where I was able to let go of the past. The first one was, it's the very first thing I talk about in the book, when I had four armed federal agents show up at my door and were knocking, and I thought they were coming for me, and I freaked out and hid in the closet. And when I went outside and looked for them to see if they were still there, and found this envelope on the door from the tax authority, realizing that I was in so much trouble, and then all of a sudden it was for somebody else. It wasn't even for me. That was a trigger event that shifted me into a place of, holy crap, I'm in a lot of fear. And then I stayed there. So instead of doing anything about it, I ended up waiting for about 2 years, and I got fired from this volunteer campaign that I was working on, a political campaign. And I pretended it hadn't happened. I pretended I resigned. And the trigger there was me finally, I think I caught a glimpse in the mirror, and I went, who in the world is that guy? He's literally lying to everybody and himself. And sometimes I think that's all it takes, is us seeing ourselves in the mirror and then asking the question, who is that? Because we get really embarrassed about how we're showing up and living with ourselves all the time, where it doesn't work anymore. And I said, forget this. I'm going to ask the question, what is true, which is a core theme in the book. It's constantly asking that. And what was true is that I got fired. I was a volunteer and I got fired. So I needed to really fix me. And that's what pushed me over the edge. And I said, okay, I've got to do something different, because the way that I have been is not going to work for who I am and who I'm going to be. And that was the big shift.
And you talk about asking questions and that recurring theme throughout the book. And again, there's that recurring. You talk about metrics, and that's a big part of productivity practices as well in a lot of ways, because people want to quantify. They want to be able to look at hard data. This is something that I struggle with, or struggled with. I'm working with clients now on, I've actually found a way to quantify it, at least in some respects. It's hard to have metrics for these sorts of things that are purely quantitative, because people just want that magic pill, right? They want to say, okay, this is the problem here. Let me just, you know, do this or take that, and it's solved. You talk about questions being a lot of what's involved with having metrics towards like having a reinvented life. How did you come up with the metrics that you needed, and what do you recommend people do in terms of measuring how well things are going in their own lives?
Well, the most powerful question, other than what is true, is what am I not seeing? And we have these blind spots. There's a chunk about that in the book, where I talk about the blind spots, and you can find those with a mentor or groups of people or therapists or just your buddy that sees something that you can't see. It's finding those things that you can't see is the critical piece, because you could think you have the best ideas in the world, or you're being productive, and everybody can see something, you just can't see it because you're too close to it. And this is why the best people in the world always have coaches. There's nobody that's extraordinary that doesn't have a coach. I mean, even Bill Gates has a coach. His name is Warren Buffett. So everybody should have those eyeballs looking in. and helping people to figure out what the drivers are that we should be measuring. I think a lot of times people get obsessed around the outputs, the key performance indicators of our life or our business. And what we're forgetting is that that's the outcome that we want to have. Those are those moments in time, the success pieces. And the fulfillment part is the drivers, what we're doing, the creation piece. And if we can fall in love with the drivers, then the key performance indicators, the outcomes tend to take care of themselves. But we've got to figure out what the drivers are and get really, really serious about focusing on those, not just in the vision of what's going to happen.
How important are frameworks to you? I mean, you've come from a background where there is structure. And a lot of people, when they go down this path of reinvention, they either don't have structure or they can't find it. How important are frameworks and structure in the process of kind of going through this reinvention process? Because the last thing I think you want to do is go in there blindly. And otherwise, you end up reinventing yourself and you end up coming out the other side going, what happened? Like, so what do you think about, like, and what are the frameworks that you kind of have put in place so that when you reinvent one time, maybe multiple times, you don't stray too far off course.
Mike, the difference between somebody changing their mind and exchanging their mind is exactly what we're talking about here. You can change your mind, but if you don't change the structure, if you don't have structure, then you're just going to change your mind back and forth and really go back to your least common denominator, where you were. And if you're willing to build structure, then you can exchange your mind and shift who you are, shift what you're doing, your results, your entire life. And it's funny because people resist this. This is a big part of my shift. I mean, this is probably one of the most powerful things ever, that freedom is based on building structure. And people go, I don't want to have time blocks. I don't want to put a calendar in place that drives everything in my life. That's where you create freedom, because if you don't set that up, you have chaos. And chaos, there is no freedom, because you're always afraid you're going to be missing things and you're afraid, what am I supposed to be doing? What's happening? And people totally misinterpret the idea of how powerful structure is in creating freedom. And that's really what we want.
It's really interesting, because I say frameworks foster freedom a lot. And with the methodology I teach, you're right. Creatives are notorious for this, because they, they're like, oh, well, I don't want to be tied down to anything. And I think and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, as long as your frameworks have the flexibility that you need, but aren't, so at least there's some boundaries set. I think that's all you're asking people to do is figure out, you know, what the boundaries are, both the boundaries they've set for themselves and for others. So that way they have some kind of, it's kind of like having a sheet. Having a sheet of paper. You can only draw, if you don't draw on the paper, then you're going to be drawing on your desk and all that stuff. Like, that sheet of paper is a boundary. You can do whatever you want within that sheet of paper, but that sheet of paper is the boundary. Is that kind of what you're getting at here as well?
Yeah. And you get to pick how big the piece of paper is and where it's put in your house and what the view. I mean, it's up to you. You still have this freedom of determining that. But if you don't have any structure, if you don't actually lay that out in front of you, you're going to end up with a mess. I mean, you're not going to have anything that's worth anything. It's just going to be chaos. And that's what the universe tends towards. If you don't focus, if you don't have energy and entropy, it naturally falls apart. And that's what our lives look like if we don't have this type of formulaic approach, where we say, here's the time. It's funny that people will spend all this time and they go, I had a really productive week, and you ask them what they did. And they say, well, I did this thing. And you go, there's 2 hours. What was the other 50 hours you claimed you worked? And they have no idea, because they didn't really narrow in. And if we narrowed in, we'd be 10 times more productive, but we don't want to do that because we're afraid we're going to kill the creative genius, which is totally stupid.
Let's actually talk about the difference between, you know, when you're dealing with creatives or someone who's more, let's say, I'm going to paint it with a brush and say artistic, or and Todd Henry will say everybody's creative in a lot of ways, and I totally agree with him, versus the people that are very pragmatic or maybe practical and don't feel that they've got the creative components. There's that idea of success versus fulfillment. And I think that some people really struggle with, and you talk about this in the book, the difference and how we get defined by success. It's really interesting. I was actually thinking about this today as I was listening to How Far I'll Go from the Moana soundtrack. I don't know if you've seen the movie. Some members of my audience definitely will have, because they have kids. You can't avoid it if you have kids. the song is basically saying, here's what is expected of me. Everyone else has their own role. Why don't I feel that I can't fulfill that role, or that role doesn't feel right to me, but maybe I should just go with it. Like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not going with this? How do you kind of get past that whole success versus fulfillment dichotomy that people face?
I think if we're really honest about what success is, it's this moment in time. And what we're missing is we don't live in a moment in time. The only time that happens is when somebody has a high school moment and then they stay there the rest of their life. And that's all they talk about over beers for, you know, the next 50 years. But that's not what our lives are supposed to be about. They're supposed to be this fulfilling journey and this adventure. I mean, it's really a hero's journey for all of us to go out there and experience this life. That's where the fulfillment is. It's the entire process. It's the day to day. If our entire focus is on when this one thing happens, then everything will be good. Or here's the moment in time that I'll have this outcome with my business. It'll hit this certain level, then I'm happy. We're screwed. And so we're setting ourselves up for a miserable existence with a maybe moment in time that possibly will be hit. And then what happens? It's gone. It's fleeting. And that's the problem with all these focuses on just having these goals that are events. It's we're literally setting ourselves up to spend the majority of our time in pain. And miserable and frustrated and probably on a lot of drugs trying to numb ourselves. Mm. And that's why we have to go towards fulfillment and figure out what the drivers are. That's our day-to-day thing. And if we structure that, we're setting ourselves up for this experience that we're going to fall in love with versus this life that we're trying to run from.
I want to touch on a couple more things before we wrap up today. And they both start with the letter S. So there's two things you talk about in the book that I think are critical. I think no matter what you do in life, whether you're seeking to just continue forth with the path that you're on or whether you want to reinvent, and that's the need for stillness and simplicity. I don't think enough people stay still long enough and step back and really think about things. And I think that they tend to make things complicated rather than simple. And there's a big difference between being complicated and being complex. There is a difference there. Can you touch on a little bit? And I don't want you to give too much away in the book, because otherwise people are going to go, well, there it is. Don't need to buy the book. But
cheaters.
It's like this is the blinkest version of the book. So when it comes to stillness and simplicity, what role they play in the reinvention of one's life?
The whole idea behind stillness and simplicity, and I'm glad we're hitting these, because when we think about what's going on today, now more than ever, we have things flying at us in every second. There's a million things hitting us on Facebook highlight reels of people's lives that we're comparing our life to, and these moments in time, the success moments we're seeing. We're constantly on the move. We're craving bigger and more, and it never ends. Very Western approach to things. It's a little crazy, and we're stressed out. If we will just find a practice, and for me that's yoga, it's martial arts and meditation. If we find a practice, and even if it's just minutes a day where there's actually stillness, we'll start to hear things in our own minds. We'll start to feel present and grounded, and it starts to shift things. It literally changes the chemistry in our body. Deepak Chopra talks a lot about this with meditation. And what's happening is we're killing ourselves inside out because of the stress we're putting on ourselves, because we're going so fast and we never have the stillness. And we're missing all the intuition that comes in if we just pay attention to the stream of consciousness that's there. I mean, we're pretty smart inside, but we're always looking for these external gurus and these messages instead of listening to ourselves. We've got a lot of innate intelligence that's waiting for us to hear if we're just still. So that's the first S. And the other one with simplicity, usually the most powerful thing that we can do is not add something on, it's to delete something. It is, it's to what I call the blank slate approach to life. And this came from moving. I moved a lot. And one time I was moving, and it was like the third time in 2 years. And I looked outside at all my piles of stuff, and I went, what, God, this sucks. I mean, this is terrible. I don't want to move this stuff in. And actually, what do I really want here? And the question made me think, if I didn't have anything, if my house just burned down, what would I actually bring in here? And the funny part was, it wasn't very many things. It really didn't. The stuff from the past was legacy stuff, and it didn't fit me anymore. And then I realized, wait a second, this actually doesn't just apply to my stuff. This applies to people. This applies to my thinking. So I need to really think about my life as a blank slate, a brand new canvas. If I was to clear everything out, all my thoughts, my behaviors, my rhythms, my patterns, my people, and start over, what would I bring in? How would I think, and who would be a part of my life? And all of a sudden I went, there's a lot that needs to be eliminated and deleted, and it cleared the space for me to start to evolve and go towards my potential. And that's what can happen if we start to simplify and hit the delete button and really ask, if we had a blank slate, which we all do every single day, what would be on it?
You've given my audience and me a lot to think about. I'm big on the Rees, as you heard earlier. And I've given, like I said, I've gone through this book. There's some great stuff in here. It's a really great read too, because the way it's designed is it's easy to digest. I think a lot of this stuff, it's broken up in a way that, for lack of a better term, simplifies it. Which is a good, fitting way to kind of wrap things up. Damien, where can people find you, and where can people get your book? So that way they can learn more about how they can reinvent their life starting today.
Go to Amazon, grab a copy of the book. And when you have the book, there's a lot of activities there. And if you go to DamienLupo.com, you can download a free copy of the workbook that's the companion for the book. And it allows you to engage with the book so that you're not just reading it and then it goes away, to where you're really participating in your own reinvention. So pick up download a copy of the workbook at DamienLupo.com and grab this thing in any form, Audible, Kindle, whatever it works for you. It's on Amazon ready for you.
Awesome. Damien, thanks for joining me today on the Productivities Podcast.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
And there you have it. My conversation with Damien, and I had a great time. In fact, he's got a bonus episode where we discuss his writing process and things like that, which you will hear if you are a Patreon supporter of the show. And if you're not, I'm not going to tell you all the reasons why, but I will tell you that you get a bunch of bonus materials, you're part of a community, and so on and so forth. But if you want to go to patreon.com/productivityist, you can check out all of the reasons why you should become a patron right there. So head over to patreon.com/productivityist to check that out. Big thanks to John Polster for producing this episode of the podcast. And thanks to Damien for joining me this week on the show. Thanks to all of you for listening. Until next time, I am your host, Mike Vardy of Productivityist, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.